When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
It's time to get inside the Giants huddle.
Let's go, let's go, let's go.
On Giants.com.
I like it.
And the Giants mobile app.
Boom. Give me some juice.
Part of the Giants podcast network.
Let's roll.
Welcome to another edition of the Giants huddle podcast, brought to you by Citizens, the official bank of the New York football Giants. I am John Schmelk. Thank you so much for joining us today. By the way, go back if you have some time and go check out our last episode. We took all of the player interviews from the weekend with Sean O'Hara, Madeline Burke, and the newest members of the Giants. We put them all together into one podcast so you could easily check them out and listen to it. So go check that out. Now we welcome in our guest, Jeff Risden. He joins us every year during the draft process. We didn't have a chance to talk to him before the draft this year, so I was thrilled to have a chance to talk to him after the draft to get his full take on what the Giants have done. We'll touch on the draft as a whole as well, and everything else that happened in the 2024 NFL draft. Jeff, it's great to see you, dude. First of all, tell the folks where they can find all your great work.
It's good to be with you again. You can find me at Draft Wire on USA Today. I also run Lions Wire, and you can hear me on various radio things all over the place. So just look me up on X. It's Jeff Risden, R-I-S-D-O-N, and you'll find me.
Yeah, all that great stuff on Draft Wire, which, of course, that shows up on USA Today and stuff like that and all that stuff too, right, Jeff?
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. So make sure you guys go check all that out. Jeff joins us every year, does a fantastic job talking draft. So, Jeff, let's start with the Giants. They had six picks in this draft. And I think taking a look at kind of how the draft went, I think it fell pretty well in terms of need. Let's start with that first overall pick at sixth in the first round. They end up taking Malik Nabers. Your thought on Nabers as a player and the Giants' decision to go with him in that spot?
Yeah, he's a very impressive player. There were a lot of people that thought he was better than Marvin Harrison Jr. I was not one of those, but he's close enough that, like, you get why he was so coveted. Got speed, athleticism, ability to run after the catch for days. That's probably my favorite trait of his. He can turn a simple swing pass into a long touchdown. He has enough speed to beat anybody over the top. He's got the confidence to do it, too. One of the things that I noticed about him when I met him in Indianapolis, he's bigger than I thought he would be.
He's thicker, right? He's a thick dude. And
yeah.
He seems much closer to 6'2 than he does to 6 foot as well, to be honest with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was expecting a guy that was like 5'11, maybe 6 feet and you know, a little bit skinnier. There's some mass there. And I think that's going to play very well for his style. Because one of the worries before I had seen him in person was, I don't know if, can he take the big hits? And he's built to take that. So I was very impressed with it. His tape is outstanding. And he did it against very good defensive backs across the SEC. There's a whole lot to like about Malik Nabers. He's a very talented player who will make Daniel Jones and eventually whoever else is playing quarterback for the New York Giants that much better. He's looking at the needs and looking at the Giants team, my God, he's going to be your alpha dog right away on offense. And that's what the team needs, in my opinion, looking at it from afar.
Yeah, and look, Jeff, you love the flexibility too, right? At LSU, he can play outside. He can play inside. Which spot do you like him best at?
I like him. So, as you know, I also cover the Detroit Lions. I like him in the Amon-Ra St. Brown role of playing inside but moving him around. You can dictate coverage matchups that way. You can tip off your quarterback to the coverage that way. Move him around, start him in a bunch formation, move him around a little bit. There's any number of things you can do. I like him because he does have that kind of size. I do think that he can play outside and probably thrive there. But if you get him on the slot, he's going to be facing smaller guys, and he can bully them a little bit. And again, I didn't think that was necessarily going to be a big part of his game, but, you know, seeing him and then watching him more, and like, oh yeah, if you look at the Ole Miss game, he was not shy about, you know, catching a contested catch and getting physical with a defensive back and getting a release off of it. And that's something that, you know, for a guy with his speed profile and his ability to make, you know, spectacular catches down and beyond the defense, the fact that he can do it in tight spaces too is also a really good thing. And you can use that anywhere on your offense. You can line him up inside, outside, wherever.
Yeah, and look, it's necessary to game plan for a guy like this, Jeff. And that's what I've been trying to stress here. With the loss of Saquon Barkley, another player defense has had to game plan for, you really didn't have that guy on this offense anymore, especially with Darren Waller contemplating retirement, right? And, you know, he's been injured the last 3 years, hasn't put together a big-time season for a while now. You know, for a guy like Neighbors, yeah, he can win deep, but to the point you just made, he can catch that 5-yard slant, 8-yard slant, and take it for a touchdown on any given play. Giant fans remember that when Odell Beckham Jr. was here. And when that's the case, and you can win in different ways, that defensive coordinator is going to have that guy circled in red Sharpie on his game plan every single week, which really, to your point, will allow your whole offense to understand what the defense is doing based on how they're handling Malik Neighbors.
Absolutely. And you can create some matchups for some other guys that way. He's going to make whoever else is catching passes from the Giants that much better. Because, look, if he starts to go deep, that safety's got to go there. You cannot ignore that. There aren't corners in the league, even the best corners in the league, are going to need some help with him over the top because he's so capable of cutting that back inside on a post or breaking it off on and coming back. Like, they need that. That's going to create a lot more room elsewhere. Hopefully Waller ever gets healthy or plays again, he'd be a perfect complement for that sort of thing. And it sets up very nicely for that sort of off the ball action. You know, being able, you know, you brought up Odell Beckham, and he was a guy that could make the spectacular, but also made the routine. And I don't think he ever got enough credit for making the routine plays that well. That's something that Malik Neighbors does too. You know, he will be able to. Yes, he can make the highlight reel catch, but he will also make five other ones that are just like a simple pitch and catch and make them look really good. And I thought Odell did a good job of that, and Neighbors can do that too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm, Jeff, 100% with you on that. And I think he's a force multiplier, right? I think he helps, to your point, he helps the entire offense. There were some Giant fans that wanted him to go quarterback there in round number one. The top three guys were all gone. According to reports, they did make an effort to try to go up there and get Drake May. Based on what I've heard since the draft, while the Patriots said they were open to making the trade, it was one of those things like, we'll listen to offers, but we're really not open to making a trade there. So they went and picked the player. So you look at the J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix, Bo Nix. And at least for me, the way I had my board stacked up, you know, I had McCarthy, I think around 20 when all was said and done. I had Nix and Penix in the mid-30s. So to me, it wasn't much of a debate. What were your overall thoughts on McCarthy being a Michigan guy?
You know, I like J.J. McCarthy, and I do think that he's going to do well.
Yeah, me too.
I'm not sure that the Giants at 6 were the best fit for him. I think he needed to go to an environment where there is a little bit more around him. And quite frankly, the Giants just don't have that right now. That's one of the reasons why you're picking 6th. You know, there's some holes there. And I like the idea of, you know, he was 21st on my board. So it would have been a reach there. I actually liked Bo Nix quite a bit. That's a very interesting pick. We'll probably talk about that a little bit later. But you're not taking him at 6. And it sounds like there wasn't a lot of interest from anybody other than Minnesota coming up from what they had 11 and 23, and they weren't going to offer that to the Giants, you know, because there wasn't any need to. You're kind of in an awkward position there where if you take a quarterback, you're really reaching for it in the way that Atlanta did. And I don't think you want to beat the Atlanta Falcons coming out of this draft.
And we'll talk about that too a little bit later.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah, we will.
Round number two, Jeff, Tyler Newbin to the Giants at pick number 47. He had a second round grade for me along with two other safeties. I had a couple other guys that I thought I liked their ability to play man to man a little bit better than him. Javon Bullard and Jaden Hicks. So I had him a little bit higher, but the Giants are going to play a defensive zone heavy scheme here. And I think for a guy that you want looking at the quarterback, breaking on the ball and anticipating what the quarterback's going to do, I think it's easy to argue that Newbin was the best safety in this draft class.
Absolutely, and specifically for his zone, and like you said, he needs to see the action. He's not a guy who's going to cover in man. That's not his strength. That's not what he does. He's a very smart football player. He's a very reactive football player. He's not necessarily a dynamic athlete, and I think that's one of the reasons that kept him out of the first round. But you can mitigate some of that by playing him in a zone where he's got, you know, defined responsibilities, where he doesn't have to try to keep up, you know, with Brock Bowers coming out of the slot. You know, you don't have to deal with him, you know, having to cover Terry McLaurin deep on a one isolation play. And I like that for him. Very good player. Underappreciated player, I think, because he played at Minnesota. I think had he played at a Michigan or a Washington or something like that, a more high-profile football program, I do think he would have been regarded more, because that's a really good football player. Not necessarily the best athlete, but this is a guy who's not going to ever be in the wrong spot at the wrong time because he misread a play. And I think that that's something, you know, that's solidification of your back end. He's going to help your corners. He's going to help your linebackers. He's going to be a guy that will point things out pre-snap, like, hey, you know, watch the running back leaking out on this, or, you know, he's going to read the Texas route instead of biting hard on the out route, that type of thing. You can do a lot with that player. And I really like it. He does have a tendency to you know, overshoot just a little bit on run defense. But again, you're dealing with a second round pick here. This guy's going to play a very long time in the league and be a good, not great starter. He's one of those guys. I see him being like a guy who has like one or two Pro Bowl years as a hiccup year, but it's a guy that you're never going to be looking to replace. You're like, man, we're good there. And that's kind of what you want.
Yeah, and he's a guy that had so much experience, over 40 starts in Minnesota, Jeff. He's a guy you can plug in your rookie year, and I think you feel pretty good about it playing him right away, too.
Oh, absolutely. He can start right away, and he will be an asset right away. And he does have good ball skills. He's good with the ball in the air. It's just one of the I really like the fit there, because he's going to be a guy that's going to, you know, you talked about Malik Nabers being a force multiplier. Newbin isn't going to be that to that extent, but it's a position, again, where he's just so solid that other people aren't going to have to worry about, like, oh, like, what's going on behind me over here? You know, they're not going to have to look over their shoulder, because they know he's going to be where he needs to be. And that helps them play a little bit freer and maybe a little bit more aggressively. Maybe it allows your linebacker to come up and, you know, try to poach a route. Maybe it allows your corner to get a little bit more aggressive and, you know, try to jam a little bit more or, you know, steer things the right way. There's a whole lot that you can do with a very solid all around football player. And that's what you got in Tyler Newbin.
Yeah, and I think, well, the other thing I like too here, Jeff, is if you look back historically, top-tier athletes do not necessarily dominate the safety position the way they do other positions, right? It's not like, if you want a really good edge player, you better have a great athlete, right? If you want a really good corner, you better have a guy that runs really fast. We've seen in the past, safeties that don't test well, they come in, and they're still phenomenal players, because I think, to me, it's a position that has a lot more what's going on in your head than it does of what's, you know, how fast your 40-yard dash time is.
Absolutely. Look at Kyle Hamilton, who kind of came out of Notre Dame, and everybody was like, wow, he's really not a good athlete. And after about the first month of his rookie season, you could make an argument that he's the best safety in the game now, after two seasons. Newbin doesn't have that kind of ceiling, but he can be a poor man's Kyle Hamilton. I think Giants fans should be very happy with that.
You love turf. You're good at it. So you start a turf biz. Business grows, your savings grow. Become the most celebrated name in turf. Are you ready for all that life brings?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go to the third round here, Jeff. Pick number 70. But first, a reminder that the John Settle podcast is brought to you by Citizens, the official bank of the New York Giants, from game day to every day. Citizens is made ready for Giants fans with insights, guidance, and solutions. Learn more at citizensbank.com. All right, let's jump to Andrew Phillips here, pick number 70, Jeff. And I said this on a lot of our Giants Huddle podcasts leading up to the draft. I had trouble sorting through day two cornerbacks. I felt like they were all so close to each other. Nobody tested particularly great. The guys that had good tape didn't test well. Some guys that tested really well didn't have really good tape. There were some big guys, some small guys, some slot onlys. I had trouble sorting through the mix. I actually ended up with Andrew Phillips, I think, with one of my highest third-round grades on my board. So the Giants kind of picked him, I think, where he wound up for me. What were your thoughts on the player and kind of that just kind of middle group of corners in this year's draft?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it was sort of dealer's choice. Like, it's what are you looking for in your cornerback? Do you need a press guy? Do you need a speed guy? Do you need a ball hawk? Do you want a guy who's going to come up and set an edge and run defense, but probably can't run more than 15 yards down the field? I like Phillips because he's an aggressive ball hawk. He goes after the ball. He's quick. He's also got long speed. I don't have his 40 time in front of me. I know he jumped, I think it was 41 inches.
So, and I think his 40 was like 4.48 or 4.49, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And he's fast enough. Like, if you watch Kentucky tape, he's fast enough. And he's an interesting one. I had some trouble, the fact that he was inconsistent to me. You know, you watch a couple of games and he's very good, and you watch the Louisville game, it's like, where is he? And I think that's one of the reasons why he's available in the third round for you. He had some games that were very impressive, and he had some that were kind of off. This is where you trust in your coaching staff to, like, I know what this guy can do. He can cover. He's aggressive. He's going to get in their face. He's going to talk to them. He's going to make receivers uncomfortable with his demeanor. Kind of feisty guy. We'll go get the ball. He's going to challenge. Don't throw a contested catch in his way. He's a little shorter than you want for those, but like if it's within his reach, he's going to make a play on the ball. And that's a mindset that you want. He pairs nicely with Banks, I think, as a guy that can, you know, go get the ball, can match up, has confidence, has effusive confidence, I would say. And, you know, not to snipe from afar, but the New York media require some things out of their players. I think he fits that very well. He will not succumb to the pressure of the New York media, good or bad. And it does swing both ways. I think he's a guy that's going to embrace being on the big stage. And that's kind of what you want on a cornerback that's going to play a lot for you early.
No, I agree. And a couple things to build on it. And I'm with you, Jeff. I think he does go after the ball, and he has ball production in terms of knocking passes away, but he never had a career interception. But I feel like with his play style, you know, I feel like those are going to come. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He gets his hands on a lot. And a lot of them, by the way, are in contested catches where he's fighting with the receiver. And he will make the pass breakup and make sure that he makes the pass breakup. But he doesn't necessarily catch the ball all that well. And again, you go back to the old saying, you know, that's why he plays defense instead of wide receiver. He's very, very smart in terms of picking up on the routes. But he will occasionally overreact to a fake. He will bite on double moves. Those are things that, you know, you have to get ironed out. But again, that's why you're looking at a third round pick. But, you know, that you're right, man. That jumbled day two and early day three cornerback class. There were a lot of guys that, like, I think he can probably be pretty good somewhere, but I don't know if he's going to be good everywhere. And Andrew Phillips was one of those guys. So hopefully it pans out for the Giants on that, because he doesn't have to come in and be the number one. I like that. And I think that's something that he's got in his favor there.
Yeah, and the Giants have said they're going to start him in the slot. And I think with his physicality and his feistiness, willingness to stop the run, he had some missed tackles issues, but he was a willing tackler and he was physical. And I think that's what you want out of a slot guy.
Yeah, you want he will hit. He doesn't wrap. And he's got to learn to sink the hips when he does hit and wrap. But again, that can be taught. And I'm not, you know, not to disparage the Kentucky football program, but there was some lack of attention to detail a lot that showed with that Wildcats team, because they kind of had more talent than it might have showed in the record.
Yeah, and frankly, I still remember going back watching Will Levis last year, and I think you saw some of that inattention to detail even the year prior. Round four for the Giants, Jeff. Theo Johnson drops all the way to the fourth round. That's about where I had him, but I know a lot of people had a late second round or even round three grade on, depending on who you talk to. And unlike safety, where we talked about how testing is not a big predictor of success, tight end's the opposite. You want to draft a guy with traits and then on a guy with traits to develop, and Theo Johnson has those in spades.
He absolutely does. And he didn't get to show it very much at Penn State for a variety of reasons. I went to the Senior Bowl and I watched him down there, and he was so far and away the best tight end at the Senior Bowl. He got open against linebackers. He got open against safeties. There were a couple of times where they tried to pick your corner against him. The crispness to his routes with his speed at his size is really impressive. He's a guy that he's one of those guys, you know, the proverbial, he's going to be better as a pro than he was in college, simply because the college didn't really know what they had in him. I will use the analogy of George Kittle at Iowa. I am not saying in any way that Theo Johnson is going to be George Kittle, but that sort of like blossoming at the next level where if you just looked at the stats, you're like, oh, okay. And then you watch the player like, oh, all right, I get that. Again, he's not George Kittle, but that sort of like jump in production and ability, you're going to see more of him hopefully in New York than what you did at Iowa and or at Penn State rather. And you know, there's a lot to like about him. Don't ask him to block out in space. That's not what he's going to do all that well. He's not going to be an inline tight end who's you know going to stand up your defensive end and stay there. He can chip and release. He can motion. He can play sort of an H-back role if you really want him to, but he's at his best as a split out tight end receiving weapon. And he can get down the field. He can chew up yards really quick with that stride. Good football player.
Yeah, the good news, he does have the size if he's willing to do it to develop into a Y. I think he has the body type to do it if he's able to get in there and improve as a blocker. And I think that's a big part of it. I think watching him, Jeff, on tape, I didn't quite see that level of athleticism that I think we saw from the testing for me. You could tell he was a build-up speed guy. I didn't feel like he was as sudden as a guy like Kittle. But you certainly see between the size, the weight, the wingspan, the testing speed, I mean, all the numbers from the jumps to the cones to the agility to the speed were all good. And you hope into a different system, you know, you could just see him running those seam routes in the NFL all day long with that size.
And again, he's going to be able to attack in a zone between the linebacker and the safety role. Red zone. You just got yourself a fantastic red zone target who can go get the ball. And he does go get the ball in the air. He's not a guy that waits for it. He will stretch out and make the catch away from his frame. That was one of the things that he really did very well at the Senior Bowl. And I think that that does translate very well to the NFL. He's not a dynamic, like, off-the-line guy. He's not going to break ankles at the line. He's not going to be that kind of guy, but... You know, I thought he was worthy of going in the third round just based on potential and upside. To get him in the fourth, that's a good pick. It's a good pick. He definitely helps the Giants out this year. And he will be a good friend for Daniel Jones. And if Daniel Jones eventually moves on, whoever succeeds him at quarterback, you always want to have that big, reliable target. That's what he can be.
And then in the fifth round, Jeff, they end up going with Tyrone Tracy, who's a really interesting player. You know, he hasn't played running back a ton. But and you can tell when you watch him, he hasn't played running back a ton. And he's kind of all over the place, but he's a fun player to watch, and he's got the athletic upside that you like at the position.
He does, and you're picking this one strictly on upside, because if you're looking at his tape, it's like, okay, all right, like, do you have any vision at all? You know, that sort of thing. But he's a great athlete. He's a hard worker. He's shown that he can do a lot of different things for a team. He could be a return man. As a guy that comes in and with the kickoff change, you know, that's one of the things that a few teams mentioned across the league, that they were looking actively for a different type of return man. You want a guy who's not just fast, but has a little bit of wiggle to him and has a little bit of, you know, can balance through contact. And that's something that he does show and did show at Purdue. So there's some, you know, again, You're betting on traits here. You're betting on upside. You're betting on your coaching staff being able to develop into something more than he's been. I'll say this. I don't think he would have been there at their next pick. So if they were looking for a guy like that, they went and got him when they needed to.
I'm with you. And then around six, Darius Musau at a UCLA, Jeff. And I had not watched him before the draft. I went back and watched him after the Giants picked him. Fun player, you know, undersized. You know, I think he weighed into 225 at the combine. His testing speed wasn't good, but he's the guy that when I watch him on tape, maybe the top speed's not great. He looks sudden to me. Like, he did have quickness side to side. He was able to blitz. I think he's pretty twitchy. I think he right away you put him on special teams and you try to develop him on defense.
Yeah, and he's another guy. He's got to learn to rap when he hits. He will come up and smack you in the mouth, but if you're big or get a stiff arm out, he's kind of going to be laying there watching you run past him. A guy that I think, again, special teams, I think you hit it on the head there. I think that's where he's going to make his difference as a nickel backer who comes in, a dime package backer. He has some coverage ability. I'd like to see that improve a little bit.
You know, Jeff, that's the thing. I'm sorry for interrupting you. It drives me nuts watching college. But you have a 225 linebacker that can move, yet they don't ask him to cover. Like, he's a blitzer for them. I tried to find coverage snaps. I couldn't
There's
find
not a lot.
Them.
No, and there really isn't.
The college keeps sending, this isn't just, you know, him. College keeps sending these 225-pound linebackers to the pros that they didn't ask to cover in college. What the hell are they supposed to do with these guys? It's hard.
Yeah. I don't know. We have one in Detroit, and Steel Chambers is an undrafted free agent.
Same deal.
Yeah. Why aren't you doing what your physical talents should allow you to do? And that's a college football to pro football transition issue. And it comes up a lot. That comes up with offensive linemen, too. Like, you've got an incredibly athletic offensive lineman in college, and you ask him to just stand there and absorb. Like, let him go get somebody. I don't think the colleges – that's one of the reasons when you're looking at projections of how they translate from the college to the pros, it can be very difficult sometimes. The entire UCLA defense is a difficult projection because I don't think that they played a very – I hate to say that because I actually like Chip Kelly, too, but – they don't play a style that's very conducive for a lot of their players to translate to the next or to see how they translate to the next level because they're just sort of, okay, all right. You know, I don't get it.
But Moussa, like, you watch his skill set and his agility. He looks like a guy that should be able to cover. We just haven't seen him really do it, which is why it's frustrating for me at least.
Yeah. And upside is there. He's not super fast. He's not long speed fast.
Yep.
Two or three steps, though, he's pretty good. He's pretty sudden on that. He will, and again, he will come up and hit you. He does have some pop behind his pads. He does sink his weight pretty well. He's just got to learn to wrap and be a little bit more. One thing that I did notice, he will overrun the point of attack and run defense. So I think that's going to be something that he's got to get either coached out of him or just, you know, put him where he doesn't have to cover both ways, where he can just go to one spot and sit there. If you remember Jared Davis had that same sort of problem. I see him as sort of a poorer man's Jared Davis, which, you know, probably doesn't go over all that well, but there's a fit for that. And hopefully he'll improve on the things he needs to improve on, finds a niche where late round picks. You got to find one thing that you offer the team that nobody else does on your roster. If he finds that, he'll stick and play for a little while.
I remember Jared Davis, I think, was a first-round pick, right, Jeff, if I recall correctly?
Yes, he was in Detroit. Yes. It did not go well.
So I don't think comparing a sixth-rounder to a first-rounder will necessarily get Giant fans too upset. I think that's okay. Just as a reminder, folks, that the Giants Little Podcast is brought to you by Citizens. Giant fans love a winner. It's why they love Citizens, named the 2022 Best Bank in the U.S. by The Banker, as the official bank of the Giants and sponsor of the Huddle. Citizens is made ready for fans of Big Blue. Learn more at citizensbank.com. All right, Jeff, let's talk about the draft in general. Before we get to classes, just some of your individual picks or players that you thought went to either really good spots or you thought were really good value throughout the draft.
Yeah, and I'll actually start with a second-round pick, Johnny Newton to Washington. To me, he was the best defensive player in this draft. And the fact that he fell to the second round, I watched him. I it was like I was watching Gerald McCoy tape back in his day, number three overall pick. He's so disruptive. He is an attack dog. Really, really good fit. I really like that one.
You know, the funny thing, it's like the one position that Washington actually had players at, but it was such good value. They had to pick the player because he was sitting there like a sore thumb.
Yeah, and it's from what I've gathered from talking to people who cover some other teams, it was like he was always like plan B at their spot, right. From like 15 through 30. But they got their plan A. The way that played out, very chalky, you know, like, okay, all these guys sort of went, other than a couple, which we'll get to, it was very predictable. And I like Joe Alt as an example. Joe Alt going to a Jim Harbaugh coach team, come on.
Yeah.
What a fit. Like, I know it's the number five overall pick and you're going to like these things, but that's a really good fit for the Chargers. And yes, they do already have Rashawn Slater, but you're going to give Justin Herbert a bookend tackles like that for a long time. That allows you, you don't have to worry about your offensive line now. You're good. Like, I like that sort of mindset with that. Neighbors to the Giants is one of my more favorite picks. I really liked Romo Dunze going with Caleb Williams to the Bears. Like, I was not the biggest Caleb Williams guy. Jaden Daniels was my number one quarterback. But if you're going to make Caleb Williams work, you better have guys like Romo Dunze who can make ridiculous catches. I'll tell you a quick story. I went to the Washington game at Michigan State this year, just watching Odunze warm up on the sidelines, like intentionally having their backup quarterback throw him passes that are just like, go catch that at your shoe tops. Go catch that over the linebacker who's not even looking. Like, and wow. He made it all look easy and great. And he's got a fun personality. So I really like that pick.
Did you have Odunze or Neighbors higher on your board, just out of curiosity?
I had Odunze. They were one was a in my grading scale. I use the grading scale that our land scouting does. That's kind of how I was brought up. They were 0.01 apart. So it's like, you know, dealer's choice. They're both fantastic, fantastic prospects. Not to you know, pour salt on the NFC East. I really like Quinyon Mitchell to the Eagles. That's a guy. He compares very well to Darius Slay. He's Darius Slay 2.0, and he's got Darius Slay 1.0 for at least a year to teach him how to be that good of an NFL player. I really like that pick. A good fit.
Jeff, sorry for interrupting you again, but I thought you mentioned Washington and Philly already. I thought all four NFC East teams honestly had really good drafts, fitting needs and value with a lot of their picks, which I wish I wasn't saying that. But I think Philly got Cooper DeJean in round two, which is an unbelievable ad. Washington had such volume, and then Dallas got the offensive lineman they needed. I know you're probably a big Marshawn Nealon guy, being from your Midwestern area, right?
Well, yeah, he's from a local high school here, Godwin Heights High School in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is not too far from where I live. Good player. Probably not a high-end player, but a good fit. And Cooper Beebe, man. I loved Cooper Beebe.
I had a second-round grade on him, Beebe. So I'm
I did
you.
Too. I would have been okay if the team took him in the first, quite honestly. He will come in at a Pro Bowl caliber level. And it reminds me so much of when they got Martin down there. Like, everybody overthought him, and they overthought Cooper Beebe too, so...
You're ready for a change. Payday comes early with Citizens, so go to that retreat. New you moves to the country. Now you're raising goats and launching a lifestyle brand. Are you ready for all that life brings?
And like a couple years ago, I was not a big fan of their Tyler Smith pick. I thought he was raw. I thought he was taped with his hands were all over the place. And you could say the same stuff about Tyler Guyton in some ways, right? Where his hands need a lot of work, but the Cowboys at this point, I think you have to trust them to be able to develop offensive linemen because they've done such a good job of it over the last 10
They have shown
years.
That. I was with you. Guyton wasn't even in my top 60 players.
Oh, wow. Wow. He was that low for you, huh?
He didn't have the focus with his hands, with his feet. He's all over the place. Now, again, when he did put it together at times, okay, all right, I like it. It's good. But I worried about him. But he did go to a place, like, to your point, they have a good offensive line coach, and they have a good sense for who can work with their offensive line. And I think that's an asset that they've got that, unfortunately, the Giants have to go up against.
All right, any other players or classes that really stood out to you?
You know, I'm going to give my Detroit Lions a little bit of love. Terrion Arnold trading up for him was the number one defensive player on their board. I loved him. He was a top 15 prospect for me. The biggest weakness on their team was outside cornerback. They went and addressed it. So I'm very happy with that. He's got flair, and that's something that secondary needed. That's a good one.
You know, the funny thing, Jeff, last year, everyone, Jahmyr Gibbs and Campbell, they worked out. They were such great picks. And I was sitting here saying, yeah, they were good picks, but they could have drafted a corner and they really needed one of those. So we'll see if it was good long-term, but now I feel like getting Arnold this year, and then they got Rakestraw later on, right? If I'm not mistaken,
good. Second
so
round.
They picked up two corners this year. It makes last year's pick league even better because you made up for what you didn't pick with those picks in last year's first and second round. So I'm with you. I thought the Lions did a really nice job picking up both those guys.
Hopefully it translates to the field. Fingers crossed.
Except when they play the Giants. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, obviously for y'all. But yeah, that's I'm trying to think who else. I thought Kansas City did a pretty good job of maximizing their draft value for where they were at. Again, I'm not necessarily crazy about all of their picks, but I think they got guys where they should have gone. They didn't reach, and they've had take an FAU last year, and he barely played as a rookie. You know, they've had some reaches. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is like, what are you doing? Like that's a third round guy you're taking in the first round. I thought they did a very good job of finding guys who fit what they want when they needed to get it. So
I thought Tsumata Iyo was a very good value at the end of round two. I know he had some, you know, maybe personality stuff that some teams were a little wary of, but much like Guyton, I didn't have that far away from each other on my board, to be
same
honest
here.
With you. I thought they were similar. Yeah. Jordan Morgan kind of in that neighborhood with them too. I had them more like beginning, end of the first round, beginning of the second. But again, just a really big guy with just so much physical ability that you just have to hone in on a little bit.
Yeah, and Tsumata Iya is a guy who he can be your starting right guard for a long time. If he ever learns how to get his – one of the things that you noticed in watching BYU tape, and it was very true at the Senior Bowl too, he's so tall in his stance on the snap, even in a two-point stance. It's like, wow, man. Like, just sink that down. Because he's a big dude, but he's not, like, freakishly tall, freakishly big like that. So they can work on that. That's good. Glad you brought up Jordan Morgan. That's another one. The Packers got a – they got a really good player there. I think a lot of folks put it out of mind that he missed 2022. He came back. He had the best tape against Laiatu Latu, who's a very good football player. And I like that pick too. But Jordan Morgan's going to be really good in Green Bay, which, you know, unfortunately, we're fluffing up all these NFC teams by and large.
I know.
They had good drafts, man.
How about like day three? How about like day three guys that you kind of fell in love with and you just think are going to be good players and are going to make it?
Yeah, and I will go back to my Lions real quick on that. Christian Mahogany out of Boston College was a guy that I would have been happy if they took him in the second. Absolute snowplow of a run blocker. Wasn't going to fit a zone scheme, but for a gap power scheme like the Lions run, he's going to be fantastic for that. So that's a guy that I really liked.
The Lions got one of the players really late that they ended up trading back in for. Not the kid from British Columbia. There was some. They drafted someone next to Mahogany very closely, right?
Sione Vaki.
Yeah, the running back, right? Well, or is he a safety?
Yes.
We'll have to find out, right?
Yeah, he will be a running back. He will play special teams a lot. So that'll be an interesting one. I'm trying to think of the day three guys that I liked. I can't. It escapes me because I do prep on this too. I liked what the Texans did on day three better than what they did on day one and day two. They didn't have a day one pick. But they got some players that I think are going to be helpful there. And, you know, that's a team, they're poised to go up with C.J. Stroud and getting a supporting cast around him. And I thought they did a pretty good job this on day three of the draft. Honestly, you know.
Oh, you know what I was thinking of? Mekhi Wingo. I thought Mekhi Wingo in the sixth round was great value for Detroit. That's who I was trying to remember. I had him as like an early third round pick. I thought he was a really good player.
Yeah, his problem is that he's, you know, what, 6'1" and 280 pounds. That's a very odd size. But if you've got a plan for a guy like that, you can make that work. Hopefully Detroit comes up with a plan for that.
Absolutely. All right. What were some of the moves or picks or classes that kind of had you scratching your head a little bit?
Well, you got to start with the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, I'm sorry, I can't help but laugh. They took Michael Penix Jr. at number 8, just after they gave Kirk Cousins all that money. They cannot get out of Kirk Cousins' deal for at least 2 more years. And they didn't tell Kirk Cousins that it was going to happen. Like, how do you screw up that badly? I generally like Terry Fontenot. I think he's done a pretty good job of assembling a core talent there. But my goodness, that's like, that's a team. Their division is there for the taking. Like the NFC South is pretty wide open. I don't think Carolina's close yet, but New Orleans, Tampa Bay. Okay. Yeah. Tampa Bay is a pretty good football team, but they're not that team. If you get Romo Dunsey there, you get Brock Bowers there, play Brock Bowers with Kyle Pitts. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. You get Byron Murphy, one of the pass rushers. Like,
yeah, exactly. Get Dallas Turner. Like, everybody thought they were going to do get Quinyon Mitchell, get Terrion Arnold. Like, there were so many other ways that they could have helped their football team challenge for a division title and a home playoff game or two in 2024, 2025. And they threw that all away for I was not a Michael Penix guy. The injuries scare the tar out of me. 4 separate season ending injuries at Indiana. I know he avoided them at Washington, but that's one of the reasons why he's older. It's one of the reasons why he adapted his game, and everybody at the combine was like, oh, wow, he can run. Well, yeah, he ran a whole lot at Indiana, and look what it did for him. It kind of darn near killed, you know, two separate shoulder separations that required surgery, two separate ACLs that require, like, I'm not a fan of that pick at all.
And, you know, Jeff, the thing about it, and this is the point that Daniel Jeremiah made on the Move the Sticks podcast, which was a good one. You know, if you really love Penix and you want to pick him at 8, fine. You should have known that when you got the free agency, right? At that point, your hay should have been pretty much in the barn. Your combine is done. You've watched all the tape. The Senior Bowl's in the bag. If you really love Penix that much, you feel really good he's going to be there at 8, that no one's going to pick him ahead of you, right? Why would you then spend all that money on Cousins? That's why it almost feels like this was one of those, like, maybe it was an ownership pick or something. It seems like a really weird decision for the front office, if they knew they loved Penix that early in the process, to go out there to pay Cousins and then, you know, draft him 8. I don't know. To me, I feel like something in the decision-making process is missing, and I've been trying to figure it out, and I don't have a real good answer, to be honest with you.
I don't either. That's one that you saw the shot of their draft room and Arthur Blank coming up and, you know, like, hey, what happened here? I think that was a very appropriate action for him. Yeah, that's, I just don't get that one, man. You know, some other class. So in general, I liked what the Pittsburgh Steelers did, like Troy Fotanu home run. The fact that they took all those offensive linemen, That's a little bit of overkill there. Might be an overreaction to not having it, because they took a couple last year and those guys aren't bad. Like, if they all can play together, that's great. But there's a couple guys who are very redundant with one another. I'm not sure that's – they had other needs. I know Steelers fans will tell you that they didn't really have any needs at all, that they're the best team in football, and, you know, that shouldn't be ever questioned. But I say that, I'm a Clevelander, so I have a little bit of an attitude about that. They got good football players. I struggle to see how they all fit into their grand scheme of things. So, you know, I wouldn't hate it if I was a Steelers fan, but I would stand to question, like, is there a plan on how all these guys are going
to
work?
And I will say they definitely drafted to their brand, man. They drafted a bunch of big, bruising, physical guys, even Roman Wilson, right? He's a guy that blocked a lot in Michigan playing for Jim Harbaugh. Yeah. So they certainly drafted to the personality that I think Mike Tomlin wants to have for his team.
And that's what they do. Another one that I thought Seattle hit a home run with their first round pick, and the rest of their draft was like, oh, now they didn't pick a lot, but I don't know about this guy. It's like, there was every spot, there was like 4 or 5 other guys that were available that I would have taken over the guys that they took. And that's sort of a stilted way to look at it. And, you know, it's projecting my opinion on their draft, and that's not fair to their draft, because I'm not a Seattle Seahawks aficionado. I don't know everything about that team, but I just felt like they could have done better than what they did. So, you know, and in general, I'm also not a fan of drafting punters or kickers. And they did go. I will say Joshua Carty, Will Reichard, the kicker from Arkansas who went, they're phenomenal prospects as kickers, but I really don't like drafting them.
Yeah. And Torrey Taylor went, you know, from Iowa, who certainly punted a lot there. I mean, that's for sure. He certainly had a lot of reps.
He was their offensive MVP. They didn't name him that, but he should have been, because he was really, really good at it. Great punter. The difference between having the best punter in the league and the 15th best punter in the league is kind of negligible. You know,
all right, Jeff, before we say goodbye, give me just any final thoughts you have on either the Giants or the draft class, the NFC, anywhere you want to take this, the floor is yours.
Yeah, you know, I think I really like the Washington Commanders draft class. I don't do draft grades. They would have gotten the highest draft grade if I had one. And we talked a lot about Philadelphia and Dallas. The Giants are in a spot where they're looking up, and the teams that are above them got better. So I would say my message to Giants fans would be patient with your guys, because you've got some good football players. You have potential coming. And like, your window is different than theirs. And judge your window on what your window is. And I think that's a good spot to start. But overall, fun draft. There's 2025 stuff coming out already. I'm not ready for that yet. I will start watching in a couple days, but until then, so I'll say this. You guys are my last media appearance of the 2024 NFL draft, and I'm very happy to be on with you, but I'm also happy that this is over. It's been a long slog.
Me too. We have our final episode of our draft season podcast next week. Tony Pauline and I do that. And we're recording on Friday, and that is our look ahead to 2025. So the last 2 days, Jeff, I actually have been watching guys for the 2025 draft.
Just oh, so God bless you.
And then I'm going to put it aside for like a month and a half and be like, all right, I'm going to go watch some OTAs and watch some NFL football for once, and I don't have to worry about watching college guys. But look, when it comes to the draft, as you well know, the process never ends. There's always one more guy to watch, which is why it kind of makes it fun in a lot of ways. You know what I mean?
I am secretly looking forward to watching a lot of players. So when I watch college football, I tend to focus on the players that are going to be draft eligible. So like I'm aware of who a lot of these guys are that are being mocked in the two early mocks, but I haven't really studied them. So I'm kind of curious to like, all right, let's see what we got in quarterbacks. Let's see what we got in defensive linemen. See some of these offensive war daddies up front. So I'm kind of ready for it too. It's hard to pry myself away, but I need the downtime because I'll tell you what, watching tape of all these guys who are going to be undrafted free agents, you know, the number 448 player on the consensus big board. And sadly, I could tell you a lot about him. I'm ready for that to be done. So I really love the 2024 draft season. I appreciate all the fans who went along for the ride, and you know, we're ready for more, but we need a little break.
Jeff Risden from DraftWire. Find them on X. Jeff, we appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much for joining us on the Giants Huddle podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
It was brought to you by Citizens, the official bank of the Giants. I'm John Schmelk. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.